Welcome back to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, Eastern Utah's home for the Utah Jazz.
Game one of the NBA Finals tonight. It's always an exciting time. Even if you're not a fan of the two teams playing, game one in the closeout game of the NBA Finals, I don't think there's anything like it. And tonight, we get a little bit of a different vibe. We get Milwaukee and Phoenix. Now, no Giannis tonight. We'll talk about that. And are these Phoenix Suns just a team of destiny? It seems like everything has kind of broke their way as far as the season in general is concerned. We'll talk about that more right now with our NBA insider, Jamison Welsh, who's joining us over the phone. Jamison, game one of the finals. Had to get you on the show today. I appreciate the time.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me, as always.
Absolutely. Big storyline right out of the gates. No Giannis in game one. You and I were talking off the cuff. I don't believe he plays game two. I don't even know if he comes back game three. You said you're comfortable with, yeah, we'll see him around game three.
Yeah, I think, bring him back game three, give him some more rest, give him some more rehab time, home court event, for home court fans, all that stuff. You're probably going to be down 0-2, so bringing him back, at home is probably the best thing to do. With that being said, they're in a tough situation. Like you mentioned, Phoenix feels like a team of destiny. Ever since game two of the last series, when they were outplayed by the Clippers in that game, and they hit, the lob at the end, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, well, this looks like it's their time. Like, it's their thing. And, I think of a couple of game twos in conference finals that had a weird, not weird ending, but similar endings. Of course, last year when Anthony Davis hit the three, we kind of knew the Lakers are going to win that series. Like, once you go up 2-0 in a way like that, you're going to win. I think it was 2015 where the Rockets were playing Golden State and Harden had a chance to win it at the end, but he dribbled off his foot, or then Claire stepped double teamed him, whatever. So whenever it's like an end like that, it just seems like it's meant to be this way. So that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah, you go back and you look at Phoenix's route to the finals, and I know that there will be a lot of people at the end of this series talking about the breaks that they got. I mean, they were down 2-1 to the Lakers. AD goes down. They win the next three. You go up against a Denver team, no Jamal Murray. You go up against a Clipper team, no Kawhi Leonard. I get it, but in the same sense, you have to take care of business. Look, I can flip this the complete opposite way. That Jazz team went up against a Clipper squad with no Kawhi. They couldn't finish, right? You go back, you look at Atlanta. They went up against a Milwaukee team, no Giannis. I get it. They were down Trae Young, but still, you have to take care of business regardless of who's in front of you. So you could throw out all these excuses with this Phoenix Suns team. The bottom line is they have found ways to win.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's all that matters is finding a way to win. At the end of the day, you got to win, and that's it. There's nothing more, nothing less. You just got to win. You got to find a way, and that's what it comes down to. It's just you figure out ways to get it done, no matter what the situation is. We can't get mad at the Suns because other teams weren't healthy. Kind of how it goes. You can go back for a long time now. Hey, this team didn't have this person, this team didn't have that person. This person was suspended, this person did this. How it goes, it happens. It's part of the game. It's part of the league and what makes the fabric of the league. So you got to give the Suns taking care of business and being ready to play for whoever's in front of them and go from there. Now, do I think the Suns are some dynasty-type team? Absolutely not. But I do think this year they've been the most healthiest and they've been focused and they're on the verge of something very special.
There's been a lot of talk about Chris Paul finally getting to the NBA Finals, but I don't think we can overlook the fact that Milwaukee has finally gotten to the NBA Finals. We're talking about a team that was led by Giannis, two-time MVP, one of the best all-around players, if not the best all-around player in the NBA. This team has been on the cusp several times. They finally have gotten there. I almost feel like the Chris Paul talk, which is warranted. I mean, this guy's had a rebirth over the last two seasons, based on where he was at towards the end in Houston. But still, seeing Milwaukee in the finals, it's about time.
Yeah, I mean they've had their chances. Like, they've definitely had their chances in 2019. They're up 2-0 versus Toronto, and up late in that game three. If they win that game three, they get to the finals. They win the finals because Golden State was hurt. They've had their opportunities. Like, they've been close. It's just one of those things where it's tough, man. The playoffs are tough. Playoff games are difficult. final games are difficult, but they've gotten through. And Giannis is a very, very special player. I have a belief there's only two superstars in the league. However, he's accomplished some things, before the age of 26 that's very special. With two MVPs, the player of the year, taking Milwaukee to the finals. It's a very, special resume. But we'll see what takes place going forward. But the Bucks are going to be around for a while. Like, I don't know if they're going to be favorites for a while, but they're going to be here for a while. Like, they're going to be around for a while. So we'll definitely see what takes place. But they did finally get together. Chris Middleton's playing the best ball of his career. And Drew Holiday, even though he's been sporadic, he seems to hit timely shots and make timely plays.
Yeah, the Drew Holiday deal, I think, is what is most interesting to me when I talk about this Milwaukee Buck team, because you look at what general manager John Horst was able to put together. This was a team that couldn't get over the hump with Eric Bledsoe with point guard spot. The Drew Holiday deal, which they gave up a lot, they're paying this guy a lot of money, it proved to be the difference maker, Jameson.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that. However, he's had some really rough games. But no, he's steady. So the one thing when you get with Drew Holiday, you know you're getting a steady ball player. And that's key. Like, that's always huge, especially from that position. You want your point guard to be steady. You don't want your point guard being inconsistent or being one day he's great, the next day he's bad. You want a levelness of consistency on both ends that you can get it. But with that being said, they gave him a lot to get him. They pretty much locked themselves into him. And it's worked out this year. But we'll see how the finals go. He has a couple of tough assignments. I don't know if you put him on Booker. You may want to put him on Chris Paul and kind of go from there.
I think the other key piece that we have to talk about here, and we knew going into the season, we knew at some point in time the Houston Rockets would play a factor into this NBA final set. And P.J. Tucker may be a guy that gets a lot of run. I mean, Milwaukee's going to have to rely on him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very good defender. He's a very good player for a contending team. What he does wouldn't help a 30-win team, but the stuff he does definitely helps the teams that are playing around this time. The last 8-4 and two teams, the things he does helps those teams. Extra possessions, taking charges, boxing out, getting boards, timely corner threes, extra pass. Like, he's a very, very valuable role player who's been underpaid probably his whole career, so hopefully he gets overpaid on the back end. But with that being said, he's been very valuable for Milwaukee because Milwaukee's defense is very good, and a big part of that is him.
Again, our guest right now, Jameson Welsh, as we talk Game 1 of the NBA Finals coming up tonight, Milwaukee and Phoenix. Start time at 7 o'clock on ABC. Jameson, we'll talk about the Phoenix Suns, and everyone's going to talk Chris Paul. We're going to talk Devin Booker, I get it, but DeAndre Ayton is a guy that we have to talk about, someone that runs the floor so smooth, and he's a proven big that can score with his back to the basket. The matchup between he and Brook Lopez, I like it. In fact, that may be one of the most interesting matchups for me, especially with the way the game has changed, right? I love this. I'm excited to see this over the course of a 7-game set.
So that's the one way to look at it. DeAndre Ayton, the reason why he's had a great postseason, it's not because of his offense, because you can't play him off the court. You know, there's other bigs where you can play off the court. And that one of those bigs gets on the All-NBA team a little too much for my liking. However, DeAndre Ayton on the defensive end is able to hold his own. That's why the Suns are where they're at. When DeAndre Ayton's able to play against smaller guys, that to me is the key. He's able to contest shots without fouling, being able to protect the rim, not basically embarrass himself on that end, as well as putting up good offensive numbers. Not a whole lot of bigs that can do that. Very few. Very, very few. So those are the bigs that can do that. They usually get max contracts. Embiid is a guy when healthy can do that. Of course, Anthony Davis is the best at that. So DeAndre Ayton being able to play well offensively, be good at the pick and roll, and be able to hold on defensively, the reason why the Suns are there. It's also a reason why they're probably going to win this series. There's going to be a time where Brook Lopez will be played off the court in this series. And the Bucks don't have a lot of answers at that spot. They put Bobby Portis at the 5, but that kind of compromises some other things. So it's going to be very interesting going forward in this series.
Yeah, it's a great point. When you go back and you look at the Western Conference and some of the bigs that have been played off the court, Zubas was unplayable. at times for the Clippers. Rudy Gobert should have been unplayable at times for the Jazz. He wasn't. That's when we saw the Clippers really take advantage in certain games. That's a great point.
You got to realize with Gobert, it was tricky because the backup was Favors, and Favors moved worse than Gobert does. So it wasn't a lot like a situation where they had another option. They didn't really have any other options. And the point of attack defense from Utah wasn't as good as people thought it was. So they were in a really bad spot.
Chris Paul's health. Let's talk about that. Are you concerned at all? Because during most of his playoff stretches, we have seen some form of injury. And I know he was actually defending the NBA as far as the compressed schedule is concerned. I actually agreed with Chris Paul on that logic. But are you concerned at all about the health of Chris Paul at this stage?
I mean, he's here. He'll figure it out. As long as his body's intact, he'll be all right. I mean, he got anywhere between 4 and 6 games play. I'm pretty sure he'll get his body right for it. I mean, he has had some bad luck with some weird injuries, but I think it's his time. I think him and his sons will be okay.
How does Milwaukee win this series without Giannis in games 1 and 2? Assuming he comes back for game 3, how do they win the series?
They got to get a split. If they go down 0-2, they're in trouble. You're not winning 4 games versus this team if you lose your first 2. You got to get a split. You got to hit a bunch of threes. You got to hope Phoenix goes cold. But hitting the three, just getting up, and then being able to defend Booker and Paul a certain way to where, you know, they're working hard for their points. If they're getting an easy 30 and an easy 28, then it's gonna be a long night. But if they're able to be inefficient in their scoring and they turn the ball over a bit, then they can steal the game. But if it's not the case, man, this series might be over quick.
Yeah, without Giannis defensively, the biggest question I have is how does Milwaukee defend the pick and roll? Because there's so many skilled pick and roll options on this Phoenix Suns team. We've seen this time and time again, especially throughout this playoff run. If it's Chris Paul, if it's Devin Booker, if it's Campaign, who has been phenomenal throughout the playoffs, they have so many different pick and roll options. It's going to be a really, really difficult test for Milwaukee without Giannis.
It is, and here's the thing. They do a lot of drop coverage with Brooks and Dan, so they drop him. He's going to have to come up on that pick and roll because Chris Paul in an open 16-footer is a problem. If you give him a bunch of mid-range jumpers that are open, it's going to be a long night for you. So if Brook is going to drop to the key or drop 10 feet, then there's going to be issues. They may have to change up their coverage just a bit just to keep things honest. But if you keep on giving Chris Paul the same looks, man, good luck. I wish you well.
Jameson Welsh should get our guest as we talk about the NBA Finals. Jameson, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. I know we'll catch up again during the NBA Finals. Always fun. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
We're going to take a quick commercial break. We have plenty more coming up here on Drive Time Sports. When we return, we're going to flip over to the national scene. We're going to be joined by one of the greatest middle linebackers in the history of the NFL, Willie Lanier, who spent his career with the Kansas City Chiefs. He was actually voted to the NFL 100th All-Anniversary Squad. It's going to be a phenomenal conversation. You don't want to miss it. That's coming up next. Willie Lanier right here on Drive Time Sports.
Since they want to know. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We always say football talk for Tuesdays here on Drive Time Sports. Kind of a tradition. Football Tuesday. Even though we have game 1 of the NBA Finals tonight, we're still going to talk football. In fact, I'm thrilled to bring in our next guest, Willie Lanier. He's a former middle linebacker for the Kansas City Chiefs, played from 1967 through 1977. In fact, he was the first African-American middle linebacker in NFL history, and he also produced one of the best resumes for anyone who has played the position. He was a 6-time Pro Bowler, an 8-time All-Pro, 2-time All-AFL, and he was voted to the NFL 75th and 100th anniversary all-time team. He anchored the Chiefs' defense to a victory in Super Bowl IV over the Minnesota Vikings, and he was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1986. That's quite the resume. And again, Willie Lanier joining us over the phone right now. Willie, a pleasure to get you on the show today. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Happy to do it.
Definitely a lot to talk about when we go over your career. I mean, extremely storied, as I mentioned, a Pro Football Hall of Famer. And for those who are unaware, a Super Bowl champion, 6-time Pro Bowler, 8-time All-Pro. And one statistic that I find just absolutely mind-boggling, from 1968 to 1975, you were either All-Pro, All-AFC, or All-AFL. So to say you had a successful career, Willie, at the Pro Football level would be an understatement.
Well, that is true. I mean, I was able to be gifted primarily with a good mind and staying healthy. Year one, I missed four games, and that was only four. And the last 10 years, I only missed one quarter of a game. So the whole idea is to be able to stay healthy and, with God's grace, continue to perform. And if you do that at a high level, it was able to be at a high level as to the career.
Yeah, you mentioned staying healthy, and I came across a story a little while ago. In fact, it was an interview that you had done with Bob Levy where you were talking about close calls and the fact that you almost died, and you didn't realize that until about a decade after. You didn't understand just how close you came due to an injury on the football field.
Yeah, what happens is that everyone was taught to tackle improperly years ago, and that was by coaches saying to put the crown of the helmet between the numbers of the person you're tackling. And if that's a running back, that's what you're doing, put the crown and helmet between the numbers. The problem was, in high school, you might get away with that, but you get to the college, you get to the pros, everybody's bigger. So therefore, that means that where you're putting your head in the middle or mass of the body will get more of a blow of force that will cause your brain to move around inside your head. And it's not a concussion that can kill you. It's having a slight tear of a vessel, having a slight blood vessel tear that you will not know it's torn. And then maybe a week later, you might collapse on the field the way I did and be unconscious for 2 hours. And then from that point, go to Mayo Clinic and be told you had an undetected subdural hematoma. And I knew that could kill you. So I asked the doctor at Mayo, can I have an unequivocal clean bill of health? They said no. It was God's grace. There was no medical intervention. So I decided to change my game without knowing what you just mentioned. And that was 10 years later. The doctor, King physician, told me on the way to the hospital in that first year, he had lost my pulse on the way to the hospital 3 times.
That's remarkable. And then after that, I mean, obviously, you go on to have the career that you have. Willie, I want to talk about some of the players and coaches that you actually got to spend time with. I mean, first off, Hank Stram. We're talking about a Super Bowl champion coach here, and he brought you into Kansas City, and you actually became the first African-American to play middle linebacker.
Yes, and that was it's an interesting time being something called first, because obviously there had not been the inclination on individuals' parts to make a change, to allow the opportunity to occur. So it was one that was not coming from Oregon State and having interest in playing the game of football. And I will say having interest, because the most important thing for me coming through Morgan State was to graduate, which I did on time in business administration. So it was interesting in terms of seeing what skills the other players had. I was the second player drafted in the second round. Jim Lynch was the first. Also, the Chiefs were looking for a middle linebacker. So we competed for the position. And to Jim's credit, he and I became great friends and roomed together for 8 years. But my college coach knew that the college All-Star game was going to be played in Chicago. And Jim went to play in that game and didn't go to training camp initially. So my college coach told me years later that I was invited. He never told me. He thought I needed to be in camp, able to show my skills. So to Jim's credit, even though he was Maxwell Trophy winner, came from Notre Dame, he said that once he got there a week later, my stature was larger than his by about 15 pounds, larger in the shoulders, you know, a different construction. So my construction fit the middle linebacker position from a physical standpoint much more than Jim's. So that second year, Hank put Jim at outside, I stayed in the middle. And that's what we did and worked together for the next 10 years.
Your quarterback on those Kansas City Chiefs teams, obviously Len Dawson. We're talking about a Super Bowl champion quarterback, one of the greatest to ever do it. You get to go up against Len Dawson in practice. What was that like, and how did that help mold you into the middle linebacker that you become?
Well, the main thing where it helped was not one of just going up against him in practice, but to have a clear understanding of an offensive system, the routes that all of the receivers run, via tight end, split, flanker, even running backs. Many times in practice, I would run the routes that the receivers ran because I wanted to become familiar with exactly what it looked like if you reverse it. And then I would have the ball thrown to me a lot, so I would become comfortable intercepting passes. So even at today, as we talk about it, I still have the record for linebackers of number of passes intercepted. And at that time, you were only playing 14 games, and the quarterback was only throwing the ball 16, 18 times a game. So we had a unique structure that I was able to be a part of, managing something that made sense in my mind, because two of the things that let you win are reduction of penalties and turnovers, where you give the ball back to your offense so they have more possession than your opponent. So if you have very few penalties, and I only had 5 in 11 years, and other guys had something close to that and had 27 interceptions, that means that you aren't hurting your guys on one hand and you're maximizing the number of possessions on the other. You convert that, you should win more games.
Again, our guest right now is Willie Lanier, one of the all-time greats, Pro Football Hall of Famer, six-time Pro Bowler, and Super Bowl champ. Willie, I saw an interview, it was a while ago, when you were announced on the NFL 75th anniversary all-team and also the 100th anniversary all-time team, an interview with Floyd Little, where he said what made you so special was your ability to read plays. And he referred to you as a defensive quarterback. So when you hear that from someone like a Floyd Little, what does that mean to you, and how accurate is that? I mean, your ability to read plays and your ability to pinpoint what was going to happen before it happened.
Well, the thing that occurs, God gives you the gift, and the gift that God had given me happened to relate to the fact that I was not the biggest high school player. I did not like lifting weights, so I didn't. And God gave me two growth spurts in my life, one from high school, from the 10th grade to the 11th grade. I went from 155 pounds to almost 185, 190. And I was a little not a linebacker, but I was an offensive defensive tackle. My high school coach came up to me prior to my senior year and said that I had better lateral movement than anybody he'd ever seen. That's what he said. So he told me, I'm going to make you a linebacker. He's pushing back off the ball that next year. For 1 year at high school, I played as a linebacker. Before I go to college that next year, God gave me another growth spurt. And I arrived at Morgan State, which I was a walk-on, and I weighed 245. I weighed what I weighed in the pros. But I still had the mind of that small person. And for whatever reason, standing 3 yards away from the ball, looking at an offensive group of people, I could figure out what they were going to do. Yeah, it was really interesting. I could just figure it out. And it wasn't something that was coached, because it wasn't. I could figure out what I was saying. And 1, 2, 3. I had to go right and left with the middle. I mean, that started with that, and you started with just some deduction. Before, if you have a tight end, the possibility you go to that side, if it's running, more so the other side. If the quarterback is right-handed, at 2 seconds, if he has a shift in his shoulders, he has to stay whichever side he's aligned. I mean, so you just had some logical 1, 2, 3s, and you put all that together, and all of a sudden, you could understand where to be filling in somebody else.
Willie, I do want to ask you about a couple of key moments in your career, and we have to start by talking about the 1969 divisional playoffs. You guys go up against the New York Jets, the world champs. You guys created a goal line stand, one that was actually for the ages. What do you remember most about that particular goal line stand that eventually won you that game?
The game was in the third quarter. We were ahead 6-3. There was very little scoring, obviously, no touchdowns at that point. Emmett Thomas, who's in the Hall of Fame also, is covering George Sauer. And Namath throws a deep ball into the end zone. Emmett is called for interference on Sauer. That means it's first and goal at the 1 for the team that won the Super Bowl the previous year in their ballpark. Obviously, an important possession, because if they score a touchdown and get the momentum, shifting, and they already won the prior year, and obviously there wasn't a lot of scoring. But what happened is that as I'm coming down the field, and a lot of the guys have their heads somewhat tucked, and my reality is that there's something that needs to be said to try to get the motivation up, because it's first and goal at the one. And my reality was that it's one of just trying to speak loudly, try to offer confidence, and let the guys know that we didn't come here to have them score and win. You know, we were going to be able to do more, so they had to earn that 36 inches. So the thing that I realized very quickly is that I don't weigh 300 pounds. I can't throw people out of the way because of the physics, which are irrefutable. But what happens is that once you line up, any movement by that offense causes a penalty, and it would take it back to the five-yard line. Namath was certainly not going to have a long count because he's concerned with movement that might create a penalty. So my reality was that as the offensive linemen are touching the ground, between the center and the offensive guard, they would not think that if Namath doesn't go on his first sound, I'm going to be moving because I would take a potential offside because it would only go from the one to the half. But if they move, it goes from one to the five. Namath says, "Hut, I'm in motion before they can raise up. I'm in the backfield and disrupt that play." So that first down play gets nothing. Then they have one half to go, second down. Everybody is more enlightened at that point, make a great stop. We hold them. Then third down, Bobby Bell takes out a play action, makes the tackle on Namath. They get three to tie the game. But then on that next offense possession we have, we go down, score a touchdown. We win that game 13.
Again, right now we're being joined by Pro Football Hall of Famer Willie Lanier. Willie said that he would hang around for two segments, so we're going to break for just a moment, but don't go anywhere. We have plenty more coming up. We will continue to talk about Super Bowl IV, plus I'll throw a couple of more questions at Willie's way about some of the top quarterbacks that he ever faced. That's coming up here on Drive Time Sports. We're back right after this.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. Football Tuesday here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. And right now, we're being joined by a Pro Football Hall of Famer, Kansas City Chief middle linebacker Willie Lanier, who played for Kansas City from 1967 to 1977, won Super Bowl IV, and was also inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1986. Willie, I got to ask you about your victory in Super Bowl IV. I believe it was seven tackles, one interception that you had in that game as you guys topped the Minnesota Vikings. In terms of overall wins, I mean, that is probably the most memorable from your career, I would assume.
No. I think it was most memorable because it had the title Super Bowl that went along with it. But really getting to the Super Bowl is the greater challenge, because if you can't get there, you can't win it. So that week before out in Oakland, who was the nemesis, and being able to beat the Raiders in their ballpark and then get there was the one that was more significant in my mind than winning the Super Bowl or being in New York.
Yet, if I remember correctly, you guys finished behind the Raiders, correctly, in the division that year?
That's correct. And then they had a playoff game for the first time. And that created the opportunity for us to have a chance to play them and beat them and then get to the Super Bowl.
Again, Willie Lanier, our guest right now, six-time Pro Bowler, eight times All-Pro, named to the one of the top 100 players in NFL history and a Super Bowl IV champ. Willie, if we continue about your career, with you being a middle linebacker, you being the quarterback of the defense, who was the most difficult quarterback to prepare for during your time?
Joe Namath.
Why was that?
Joe Namath, because he had limited mobility because of his having knee injuries in college. I had to have a mind and release that he knew the field. He knew where every receiver was going to run his route. He knew the timing of his movement efficiently. And therefore, if he was, I think, the first quarterback to throw for over 4,000 yards, and at that time was in a 14-game season, and he could pull the trick in a heartbeat. So I observed him because we played them multiple times during the career, and his skill set was just equal to none. And as I said, because of the fact that he's not having mobility, that just made the rest of his skill of knowing where to go with the ball, when to release it, how to make it all happen, was superior.
With you playing middle linebacker and accumulating the amount of interceptions that you did during that time frame, which really was incredible considering where you played and the way the game was played at that time, was it also most fun going up against a quarterback who maybe wasn't as mobile but you knew would throw the ball at any given time?
Well, it was one that after the first year, I realized that I was going to have a game that could change the game and it not be one where you thought that you could hit somebody and make a difference. Because that meant that you could injure yourself beyond comprehension. So there are other parts to the game, and that's having, as I said, no penalties and having interceptions or turnover or allow the ball to be in your possessions more times than it is than your opponent's.
Willie, one more question about your career before we move on to talk about the Honey Bear Project. You said Joe Namath was the most difficult player to prepare, or most difficult quarterback to prepare for. Who was the greatest football player that you either A, played with, or B, against?
That's a hard question, and that's not one that I'm going to answer because it's too complex. I give credit to many of the men that I played against, and many of them in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So I won't name one because that, to me, would be not central to something that I would have on the airwaves.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, the game has changed quite a bit since you played it, and so do you appreciate the way the game has changed from power to speed and with the new safety rules making it a little bit more wide open? Is that easy for someone to respect knowing that you played in a completely different era?
Well, but the era was all the same because football is football is football. Men can be injured playing the game. They have to respect the game. And as I've told people who have some trouble sometimes accepting the fact that I've very rarely played at something called 100%. And some would say, well, that doesn't sound right. How could you be in the Pro Bowl? How could you be one of the best ever play? Well, one thing I was not going to do was to injure anybody because I was trying to do something more physically than was required based on physics. So my reality was that I could have harmed people based on leverage and physics easily. But I was not going to do that. I was going to play a clean, aggressive game, one that I could have complete comfort and respect to play it. If it is to have 5 penalties in 11 years, not striking anyone who was receiver who was not able to touch the ball, and that small number of penalties would give indication of how I managed who I was in the midst of the way the game needs to be played.
Willie Lanier, our guest right now. Willie, it's been a pleasure to chat with you over the last 15 or 20 minutes or so. Before I let you go, we have to talk about the Honey Bear Project.
Yeah, the Honey Bear Project, nickname that I had since last 10 years in Kansas City, and it's about historically black colleges. It's about Virginia Union being the first one to have an athletic field. Field turf is the provider of the carpets, costs about $1 million. You always need to raise funds to promote that as an equalizer, and the schools that are unequal need to have a better opportunity for their young men and women to compete. So from an athletic standpoint, that project came to life at a field where I played my high school football, and that's gotten started. So I think Jackson State, where Dion is coming into play there, working on that field now. And Central State up in Ohio is the next one. And I believe after that will be Morehouse down in Atlanta. So it's a wonderful project. Virginia Union's field had not been replaced since it was first built in 1907. And their field is the second oldest field in the United States, the Harvard University, which was the first. So their field was terrible the year before. The homecoming, rainy, muddy, all that kind of thing. So to have your field redone once every 113 years gives some indication of the difference that happened to exist between major colleges and some of the historically black colleges. So it's a labor of love and a process to try to allow others to have equal that everyone needs to have the better opportunity.
For more information or to make a donation to the Honey Bear Project, it's quite simple. Just go to honeybearproject.com. Willie Lanier, our guest today. Willie, it was a pleasure to chat with you, truly. I could listen to you speak all day about the game of football and even moving into the Honey Bear Project. Thank you so much. It was truly a pleasure.
Thank you.
Excellent stuff from Willie Lanier. I can listen to those stories all day long. Unfortunately, we are out of time on this edition of the show. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll talk local baseball, Major League Baseball, and we'll recap Game 1 of the NBA Finals. Be safe. I am out.